if you're running a huge company like Yahoo, or even something bigger, that's something that doesn't have a shitty product, there goes Yahoo and their sponsorship.
The industry I'm in, I can work remote. I could work from, you know, an island in the Caribbean, or I could work in the island in the Pacific. As long as I have internet access.
Wait, are you talking about your OnlyFans account?
Hector Monsiger was responsible for some of the most notorious hacks ever committed.
FBI Special Agent Chris Tarbell.
Hacker turned FBI informant.
Participating in some of the world's most infamous hacks.
That caused up to $50 million in damages.
A life in the shadows.
Cyber attacks on the rise.
Welcome to Hacker in the Fed. I'm Chris Tarbell, former FBI Special Agent, working my entire career in cybersecurity. Joined as always by Hector Monsiger, friend and podcast co-host. Hector's a former black hat hacker who once faced 125 years in prison for his many years of hacking under the codename Sabu. Our stories collide in June 2011 when I arrested Hector and then convinced him to work with me at the FBI. Hector is now a red teamer, researcher, and cybersecurity expert. Hector, how you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm splendid. I feel fantastic, fantastical, wonderful, ready to go. How about yourself?
Good. I'm feeling good. I'm ready to have a little energy. As everybody knows, Hector and I talk before the show. And Hector, you have promised me tonight you're going to talk some shit.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fun night.
Oh, good. Exciting, exciting. So, Hector, we put out last week that you may be dropping some poetry on the audience. And we got quite a response from that.
Yeah, we got several emails, several messages. Folks,
several. My inbox got inundated with emails. Everybody wanted to hear that shit.
Hell yeah. Well, listen, I got to say, I even sent a copy to you and Phineas in our little private group. And yeah, so I'm going to record it. You know, you guys keep up the pushing for it, because I'm definitely going to record it on the nice microphone and give you guys some of that poetical prose. A little bit a throwback to the Def Jam Poetry Slam. You remember that? There was a show on HBO.
Yeah.
Give you some of that work.
Do you think you're going to record it before this episode goes out, or does the audience have to wait another week?
Oh no, I'm going to record it tonight. So let's see what happens.
Nice, nice. All right, so guys, expect that at the end of the show. Listen all the way through the end, and then share it on social media, and then hit Hector up. Send him some love on how much you love his rhymes.
Well, listen, I'm no Kendrick Lamar, but you know, I'll definitely spit some words and see if it fits, if it matches somewhere. So let's see what happens.
That's good. What else you got going on this week? Anything exciting?
I'm going on vacation, brother. I'm out.
That is nice. So I will warn everyone, we are going to have a show every Thursday. Hector and I, we're recording this tonight, and it'll go out Thursday the 19th. And then we will record a questions. We have a lot of listener questions. We're going to record that show this week, and that'll go out Christmas. And then we'll have another live show that goes out on New Year's. So, guys, your Hacker in the Fed episodes will be going out, even though the holidays are coming around for us. And Hector's going on vacations. Don't worry. We're not going to miss a Thursday. We're going to get some episodes out there for you guys to listen. So it'll be exciting times. Hector, do you want to tell everybody where you're going on vacation, or are you going to keep that a secret?
Oh, I'm going to keep that a secret. I'm going to... You know, I'm trying to just disconnect, honestly, you know.
Nice. Are you going to have the internet? Are you bringing your phone? Are you going to be connected somehow?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be connected to the point where you and I could definitely reach, you know, maintain communications and all that good stuff. But for the most part, I'm going to take some time to myself. I've been grinding this year. I know you have as well. I just want to relax for a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go on vacations. I don't have anything going on. My son is going to come home from college, so he'll be here for a little while.
Ooh, nice.
Be good to have him around. But other than that, I don't have any major plans. You know, it's going to be a fairly quiet Christmas, a very quiet New Year's. I don't remember the last time I stayed up all the way to the end on New Year's.
Yeah, no, it's. I'll be honest with you, bro. I don't think I've stayed up to the end as well for quite some time, many years. I guess I'm just getting old too, brother. Like by like 11 o'clock, I'm like, man, screw this. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, I can't make it, especially if I have a cocktail or two. I'm ready to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah. The more cocktails, the better.
So we had a lot of stuff we talked about before the show. We talked about the drones. Ooh. We have our take on these drones that are in the United States and what people are doing about it. About
it's the aliens.
No, it's not the aliens. You know that for a fact. It's not the aliens. People want it to be the aliens, but it's not going to be the aliens, Hector. It's going to be... I'll tell you right now. I'll tell the world right now. It's us. Yes, it's the U.S. government. So, you know why. You know why I said it is. Because two reasons. One, you would see F-22s or F-35s or whatever they are with their afterburners coming in there if they were really a threat to the United States. And also, these drones have red and green lights on them flashing. So, what a spy plane or alien life, you know, abides by, FFA rules.
Well, it reminds me of, when you see the hysteria, people going crazy, the politicians on television from both sides. You have Democrats and Republicans acting crazy over these drones, trying to make a stink about it. I personally, in my opinion, no offense to anybody, I think it's information warfare. Nonetheless, it reminds me of two episodes from The Twilight Zone. I'm sure you remember these episodes. One was the invaders. Aliens who were what? The U.S. Army. And the next one was the monsters are due on Maple Street. Another great episode of The Twilight Zone. I love The Twilight Zone, okay? And what was the monsters that are due on Maple Street? It was a campaign where, from what we saw as the audience, we saw a little community that started losing their power, and some neighbors they had power, others didn't. And then the rest of the neighbors got together. They created kind of like a lynch mob, and they went after the neighbors. And I think they even killed one who had electricity while the rest of them didn't. And at the end of the show, the camera starts to pan out, and you see a bunch of servicemen taking notes, right? Analyzing the results of psychological warfare in a guerrilla environment. By the way, there's a great read for you guys. If you look online, Psychological Warfare in a Guerrilla Environment by the CIA. You might find it. I forgot which color book it is, but great read. I read it when I was 13. But yeah, I'm not saying this is a big conspiracy by the United States military to scare the folks into hysteria. But I think that they're probably doing something like reconnaissance or information gathering, and people are just freaking out about it.
So that is a great show, and I do like going back and watching those. Did you ever watch like the Black Mirrors, those episodes, that series?
Maybe.
You should check that out. It has it's like an updated version of Twilight Zone and that sort of thing. It's a pretty good series. Check it out. Watch all 48 episodes before our next show, and then report back to whether you like it or not.
I got you. Bet.
Perfect. Binge. So lots of going on in cybersecurity this week, Hector. So let's kind of get into it.
Nah, I don't believe that.
To be honest, it is hard to pick through these stories and pick out which ones we're going to talk about. But I figure I picked out a few good ones that might fire you up a little tonight. Oof, and into it and get your true feelings out there. So
I'm excited.
The first one, Yahoo terminates their entire red team from the team Paranoids. So Yahoo has laid off around 25% of its cybersecurity team, cutting 40 to 50 employees. It's their team is known as the Paranoids. It's Yahoo's dedicated cybersecurity team, and it was done over the last year. And the layoffs have been significant impacts to the team, including elements of its offensive security team, the Red Team. What do you think about this?
Well, sometimes layoffs happen. I can understand that from any organization. And Yahoo's been on the decline for how many years now? 15, 20 years. So I kind of get it. Until I read the messaging. And then I got fired up for Chris. So let me read to you some of the messaging that came out of Yahoo with regards to the layoffs.
All right, go ahead.
So some of the messaging goes as follows. Yahoo's security program has matured significantly over the past 7 years. And is widely recognized as a world-class industry-leading operation. As part of this evolution, we've made strategic adjustments, including transitioning offensive security operations to an outsourced model. And this change reflects the sophistication of our program and enables us to concentrate resources on critical security priorities, yada, yada, yada. Here's the TLDR for the audience. Our team is great, and we have some very smart people, but we're going to have to let them go because we need to save some money. But we're awesome, at the same time. And we're very proud of the improvements we've made. So if you're awesome and you're proud of the improvements, then why are you laying off this team? You know, this industry is so whacked out of its mind. I look at this like doublespeak. I'm very, I would say critical when I see something like this. I'd rather you tell me how it is. Keep it real with me. Hey, we love our Yahoo security team. But, you know, listen, we've been on the decline 15 years. We're going to have to fire some folks. We apologize. I hope we're going to give these guys some nice bonuses and exit package, and we're going to give them some good references.
Right? I'd love a CEO to come out and be that honest. Well, you know, our product has really turned to shit, and we can't afford these people anymore. So the first thing to go is going to be security. We'd love more customers.
You know, I prefer that, Chris. I would rather.
I would prefer it too, but it's not going to happen.
Well, that's part of the problem here in the United States. We have some serious problems with language. We have a language problem. And this right here, that right there, hey, we're laying off our team, but we're proud of what we've done. That's cool, man. That's what's up. You know, you could have made an effort trying to save that team, or you could have given the leadership of that team. Let's say you have your own little Hector, or you have like my friend Dwight, you know, a good security guy. Okay, Dwight. We got to let these guys go. We're going to give you guys maybe a small investment or something, or maybe, you know, we'll whatever, something. Maybe we'll be your first customer. Maybe you guys start a business and branch off and create your own business, whatever. Like, that would be cool. That would make a lot of sense. Now you're kind of forcing four of these operators out there to find jobs in a market where nobody wants to hire. This industry is completely whacked out of his mind. So I feel for those red team operators. And I wish them the best of luck. If I have any jobs for any of them, I'll see if I can figure something out for them. But the reality is, this was really bad timing. And of course, it's right before the holidays.
Yeah.
You really had to give it to them, huh?
So let me dig in a little on this. You've been doing red teaming for a long time. You've been sort of part of this. And there's two, you know, sides to the argument for red teams. If you're going to outsource your red team, there's sort of, you know, there are some cost advantages. You don't have those bodies. You don't have to pay the benefits. You don't have, you know, the downtime. So maybe it's a little cheaper to outsource all that information. And then you also get an external expertise. You've got red teamers that, you know, they've done engagements on other systems and they bring that knowledge into your systems. But then the in-house team, you know, they provide a deeper understanding of your company systems, and they have, you know, they understand the unique vulnerabilities in the system. They don't have to get in there and learn the system before they test it. So where do you kind of side on this? You know, if you're running a huge company like Yahoo, or even something bigger, that's something that doesn't have a shitty product, there goes Yahoo and their sponsorship. You know, what are you doing? Internal team, or are you doing the external team? And
well,
why?
I'm of the opinion that, you know, if I'm a CISO and I have the budget, I would try my best to maintain an internal red team. And their jobs literally all day, every day is to break our systems. The only difference is that they understand our systems, right? Now, I would totally, you know, try to maintain that unit.
Does that let you get to like little nuances in breaking the system because you know the system so well?
Well, here's the thing. It could also blind you. You know the system so well that you're not even thinking outside the box. This is why you still bring in an outside third party for validation.
That's an excellent point. Like you just reminded me. If I write something, I can't read it. I can't proofread it. I have to read it backwards in order to find even grammatical mistakes because I know what it's supposed to say. But when I read it, I think that's what it says, but it clearly doesn't. I've screwed it up left and right. But yeah, absolutely. So sorry, go ahead. So now you're saying both worlds. You have an internal red team and you bring in an external. Now there goes your cost savings. You're paying on both ends.
No. But security is not supposed to be cheap. It is a complex problem. Here in the United States, if you look at our investments or expenses in military research and development, it is a big part of our GDP. We're spending a lot of money on developing new tools and drones and software and hardware, missiles, rockets, all sorts of technologies, right? It's not cheap. It's not supposed to be cheap. Unfortunately, that's just not the way it works. So if you're a billion-dollar business, I'm not sure where Yahoo stands anymore. At one point, they were a billion-dollar business. You know, it makes complete sense to have your own internal team, and you're still going to validate kind of where you stand in security posture with an outside third party. That's what the third party is for. When customers call me And I have Fortune 100, Fortune 50 customers. They'll hit me up. They have their own security team. They have massive security budget. They have all the tools under the sun, but they'll still call me and bring me in to validate, to give my third-party perspective and opinions. And if I find anything, any single issue, that doesn't mean they're going to fire their internal team for missing it. No, on the flip side, on the contrary, it's going to allow them to improve their security program. And now that knowledge that they gained from my report, now that knowledge spreads to the rest of the security team. And now that security team knows how to look for similar issues of that bug type. So, again, I understand why they did it. I understand where they stand economically. So I get it. What I didn't get was the messaging. Don't make it so shiny and pretty with a nice little bow when you're essentially, you know, putting a bunch of folks into the ocean with no opportunity to paddle, right? You're taking the paddles away. And right before the holidays, it kind of pissed me off. I did see similar opinions on Twitter. Twitter is a great place because I don't want to offend the our overlord. So, you know,
who's
X,
our overlord?
Oh, the great premier Elon Musk. But you know, the X InfoSec community is still strong. A lot of them have moved to like Blue Sky. But on X, they're still pretty strong. And I saw arguments from both sides of this story, right? One was Yahoo sucks and this messaging sucks. And the other side is like, well, you know, they're grown adults. Go find a job. Stop complaining, right? So I've seen both.
So you don't really have a problem with what they did. It's what they said about it.
The messaging kind of pissed me off.
Yeah.
Don't make it pretty. Keep it real with me. You just had to save some money and fire some people. I get it. But don't try to sell me a fucking dead horse. You know what I mean?
But what if that team really sucks? Would you have been all right with if the CEO come out and be like, our red team sucks, so we're going to fire them and outsource the whole thing?
Well, here's the reality check. I want everybody in the audience, for those of you that are technical, for those of you that are not technical, I'm going to give you a reality check. Red teaming, hacking, all that stuff. It's not rocket science. I am no genius. I left school at ninth grade. I have a GED. Right? There's nothing genius about me. Maybe, you know, I have some genius in me. But if your security team sucks, then maybe it's time you train your security team. Maybe you invest a little time in getting them some resources. Maybe they need to go, you know, look at SpectrOps. SpectrOps is such a great security company. They also offer like weekend getaway red team operation training. So if you have a security company if you have a company and you have maybe like two security guys and they're kind of, you know what? Put together $4,000 or $5,000, send them away for a weekend to the SpectrOps trainings, and guess what? They're going to come back super hackers. You know what I mean? So, like, if your team sucks, it's probably because of you. Bad leadership.
What are you seeing in the marketplace? Are most people wanting to join one company and just red team for that company? Or are you seeing people kind of moving over to the, you know, the outsourced, you know, hey, I want to join this team so I get a variety of shit and I get to touch different networks and do all this other stuff?
Great question. I've seen a lot of people just starting their own businesses and doing consulting because you're probably going to make more money that way anyway. You can have more clients. Your schedule is flexible. But if you go work for a big company, they're going to have you, you know, as a machine as part of the peg, right? You're going to be a peg as part of the machine. And so if you like that lifestyle, if you like to work in those conditions, that's totally fine for you. And more than likely, you're going to make $200,000 plus a year. You're going to be happy. Okay. But if that's not the lifestyle you want to live, then you probably need to just go be a consultant, start your own business, recruit some people, train some people, and voila. Now you're making 7-8 figures a year. After a couple of years, you have some good clients, a nice book of business, and you're in a good place.
Let me ask you another question. I don't think I've ever asked you this.
What?
When you are working at a company and you are a red teamer, yeah, and your company has been breached, there's an active breach going on, what is your role in incident response?
Well, if you're a red teamer, you're on the offensive side. It's very rare that the offensive and defensive teams, you know, work together. But I can imagine that if you are breached, the red teamers, since they attempt to emulate the adversarial perspective, I'm sure they'll help with the incident response process. At the very least, help investigate how the adversaries got in, put together a nice report, and then learn off of that. Remember, folks, listen, we're all going to get hacked, right? I mean, that's just the reality of it. There's always one person ahead of you, whether it's with a zero day or they've identified a 20-year-old misconfiguration. Maybe you deployed an old TFTP server, forgot about it, and it just so happens to have your Cisco config on it. And it just so happens that Cisco device is exposed externally. And the adversary is able to log into your Cisco device and hold your networking equipment ransom, right? It's always going to happen because you have humans kind of running the show. Humans tend to make mistakes. We're not perfect by no means.
Just to follow up on earlier, I looked it up. Yahoo's revenue is around $8 billion per year.
Million or billion?
Billion.
That pisses me off even more.
I don't even know who uses Yahoo anymore, but I guess somebody is.
Well, Yahoo's created a lot of great tools and intellectual property. Yahoo is no joke. It's still very big in Japan. You know, that's a Japanese company for the most part. So I give my respects to Yahoo, but guys, seriously, you kind of need to think outside the box a bit. You know, it's difficult because we don't really know what they might be making $8 billion. Maybe their expenditures, you know, supersede that.
$7.8 billion. So, speaking of third-party vendors, their next story is Reward for Justice. Reward offers information on Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea, IT companies, IT workers, and related money laundering. So we talked about this long ago on the show, Hector, that
yes.
North Korea is infiltrating our companies by putting workers in there. So now the U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward up to $5 million for information about the exportation of workers from North Korea. These North Korean workers are generating revenue, money laundering, and certain cyber activities that support North Korea's proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. They're doing it through North Korea, Chinese, and Russian IT companies engaged in North Korean IT workers and managers and support staff going to work for U.S. companies between April 2017 and 2023.
Wow. So even pre-COVID, they were getting in for remote jobs. I'm glad you brought that point up because a big political, this is the disgusting part, a big political argument during and post-COVID was remote work. And
well, it's huge now. I mean, now with Doge saying they're going to go back and get rid of a lot of the U.S. workforce by just making them come into work.
Yeah. And it depends. It depends on the industry you're in, right? The industry I'm in, I could work remote. I could work from, you know, an island in the Caribbean, or I could work in the island in the Pacific, so long as I have internet access. But yes, from the security perspective, there's trust issues now.
Are you talking about your OnlyFans account?
yeah, absolutely. I have to maintain that for sure.
Yeah, you definitely need high-speed internet for that.
No, but yeah, so they were targeting pre-COVID. I mean, look. These folks, they know the answers that you want to hear. They're acing these interviews. They're learning English from probably television and movies, you know, and they're succeeding. They're getting in. And you know what's funny, Chris? Here's the funny part about this. Here in the United States, I've heard a lot of people complain they can't find jobs. They can't find a job worth a damn.
Well, these North Koreans did. They applied for, obtained, and obtained remote employment as IT workers and in all these U.S. businesses. They also registered. Now, maybe this is where these people complained to you didn't go. They registered internet domain names and websites to make it look like they had worked other jobs. So they set up fake jobs on their LinkedIns and then set up a backstory. The FBI would call that backstopping.
Backstopping.
Yeah. So they created money transfer services accounts to receive the funds from the U.S. employers. And then they installed remote access programs on company laptops. And then they extorted payments from the employers by threatening to release sensitive information. So they really they tricked you into hiring them. And then once they did, they stole your data and then made you pay to get it back.
Well, as a business owner, Chris, how does that make you feel when you have to, you know, you find a really good candidate, right? You go through resumes, find a good candidate. They're like, hey, listen, I'm a single mom. I got three kids. I got to stay at home, you know, 90% of the time. What does a story like this do for you as a business owner?
I've never hired anybody I hadn't met face to face. You know, either we'd fly them in if they work in a different location, we'd fly them in and talk to them face to face and get to know them a little bit. Yeah. I've never been put in the situation where I even thought about hiring somebody just 100% remotely. I say that, but I've been hired remotely. You know, I've been hired to do jobs and you know, do expert work and that sort of thing, and never having met the person outside of, you know, online. I will say most of the times, post-COVID, there's always been a, at least on camera, the whole, camera meeting system, COVID changed that, where it used to be a telephone call. Now everything's, Teams or whatever, video conference.
Deepfake has nullified that, because now you can just deepfake as anybody. You even have voice changers. You can get rid of your accent if you're from North Korea, if you wanted to.
Yeah, my buddy Ilwan in the FBI, he was the first with the deepfakes for me. Yeah. He printed out a mask of Director Mueller and then cut out the lips and put his lips through it so it would talk. It actually looked pretty good. But now you and I send in this week those fake masks that you can get of each other, which we should do an episode, you as me and me as you one time.
I'm with it.
Just to see. Or even funnier, we get masks of ourselves and then we take the mask off and it's just our ugly mugs underneath the same mask.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, no, but yeah, deep fakes to get around the the video chat isn't really a guard anymore.
No, definitely not. I mean, look, a couple months ago I flew into Dubai and then I went to Sharjah to do a presentation on deep fake attacks and mitigation and philosophizing on how to deal with with deep fakes. And you have people say, like, why don't we just set up firewalls to start blocking traffic? I'm like, that's not realistic. You've had the Chinese Great Firewall, the Great Firewall of China for who knows how long, 20 something years, 30 years. And people are still getting across those firewalls. There's always new techniques and ways around that. It's just going to make you even more susceptible if you're blocking incoming traffic, looking for very specific signatures or headers. And any threat actor that goes beyond that is going to have much more success rates, because the assumption would be that, we're blocking that stuff. So this is like a legitimate phone call right now. This is a legitimate request for $40 million, right? Because they would never deepfake here in the Emirates because we blocked internet traffic. No, it doesn't work that way, fellas. You have to kind of think outside the box. In order for you to deal with a threat, whether it's cybersecurity or physical, Christian, you know this better than I, you have to understand the methodology. You have to understand the adversary, right? I mean, Sun Tzu told us long time ago. What did he say, Chris?
Guard your cybers.
Yeah, he said guard your cybers. And after that, he says, know your enemy.
Oh, that. But yeah, no, guard your cybers was the big one, though.
that's the big one.
That's what he's most famous for.
Know your enemy and you will know your vulnerabilities. You will know where you stand. I'd rather know where I stand than not. I don't want to be ignorant. I know, for example, like how I could be attacked. I've analyzed it. I could implement technical controls to mitigate that stuff. But think about like from the physical perspective, you have the U.S. military doing red teams all day, every day, doing all sorts of campaigns and engagements, either locally, domestic, or international with partners. They're not doing war games to have fun and have a great time with the boys. No, they're doing war games to identify potential weaknesses in their systems or policies. And folks, ladies and gents, and for those of you out there that are isolationists that want to live in your own little bubble, guess what? You have to do this as well, right? You have to understand your enemy and understand your vectors, and then you'll be in a much better place.
Have you seen it from the other side now that you – has any client ever asked you to verify your identity in some sort of weird way?
I mean, that's a great one. I have one client that said, Hector, we're definitely going to work with you, but we cannot work with you remotely. You have to fly into our office and be here for the entirety of the month. And we're going to pay for your hotel. We're going to pay for everything, travel, food. We'll give you a stipend, a daily stipend for food. And I was there 3.5 weeks breaking into the systems while their CISO and security team were sitting next to me. And that was not fun. It was very awkward, but I made it happen.
Was that like an exfiltration issue? Like, were they worried about you taking their data somewhere? Or what really was their big issue on that one?
Well, this only happens with financial companies. Because I had a financial company recently say that, hey, we're going to hire you, Hector. Well, we're going to hire your team, because we know that your team are good because they trained under you, but we can't have you work on the job. So these financial companies, I think it's legalese. I think because a lot of these financial companies, and I've seen this a lot, by the way, and I may have even mentioned on the podcast before, but I've seen a lot of financial companies run their security program or maybe leadership through the legal department, not through like CISOs. So when you have attorneys sitting in a room, they're like, hey, we're about to hire this former black hat to break into our multi-billion dollar infrastructure. One of them is like, what about liability? Let's think about this one, guys. I don't think we can hire this guy. Well, what if we just bring him in and fly him in for 3 months? It's going to cost us like 10 G's to house him somewhere. I'm not sure it's worth the 10 G's. We go to a company in India instead. That's the reality sometimes.
Well, just remind those fuckers that the Chief Justice of the Southern District of New York, thank you for your service as you walked out of the courtroom that day.
Shout out to Judge Prescott. Lovely lady.
Yeah. Fuck him. Sorry. Now you got me all upset. All right. So I saw this headline. I wanted to see what your take was on it. It's time to make cyber attackers pay. So the incoming National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, says U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's administration will examine ways to impose higher costs on private actors and U.S. adversaries who wage cyber attacks on America. This comes after China's Salt Typhoon, which we talked about last week, campaign which targets
senior political...
Oh, yeah, exactly. Which targeted senior political figures and siphoned metadata from 8 telecom firms. And then Waltz continued, we need to start going on the offense and start imposing higher costs and consequences to private actors and nation state actors that continue to steal our data, that continue to spy on us. So going on the offense, that sounds cool.
Sure.
But then the higher costs and consequences on private actors. Now, I'm going to say private actors are... his way of saying hackers, and then the nation state actors. What's your thoughts on this new gauntlet being thrown down?
It makes sense. Look, there's been a debate in the security industry for as long as I can remember. And you and I have talked about it. And what's it called? The hack back, right? That's been a big debate. Should we be able to hack back? Well, we have the NSA for that. The NSA could do that. Well,
Title 50. Under Title 50, we're allowed to, that's offensive. The FBI does not have Title 50 authority.
Look at that. So it only makes sense that they might expand that Title 50 to other agencies. Maybe the FBI will have their own hacking unit. Maybe your boys go get with a job. But here's the reality, right? I'm in the middle of hackback. I don't have any ethical boundaries. If you're going to hack back into a Chinese actor's network, by all means, go ahead.
It's not a U.S. crime. It's you know, there may be political ramifications. You may be considered an act of war if a U.S. Government agency is doing it. Sure. But it's not illegal in the United States to hack into China.
Well, I hope that you just didn't inspire a whole bunch of vigilante hackers.
I'm not inspired. I'm just educating people. But I don't know. Impose higher costs and consequences to private actors. I think that's one that fires me up a little bit because people don't understand. Like, you faced a long, long period of time in prison if you would have gone that route. And some of your cohorts that lived in other countries did not. They got slaps on the wrists and walked out of court.
Sure.
They did basically nothing. Now, you know, I'm not arguing that the laws over there are better, different, or whatever. The punishments are certainly different. But I don't know. I certainly understand the nation state actors and, North Korea's, the China's, the Russians that are hacking into us. But higher consequences for U.S. actors? Maybe that's what we need to stop it. Okay, so I know a lot of people bitch and moan, and, my son and I get into this conversation all the time about, what tariffs we really would do. You and I have gotten into it. What tariffs really would do.
Sure.
If talking about Trump and him coming in. I think it's a threat. I think, it's just a threat. Like, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to put a tariff. And they understand it, whether, Trump really does it or not, who knows? Maybe that's what this is. It's just another threat. So don't hack our shit or we're going to really go after you.
Well, look, I have to agree there has to be consequences. There's a lot of accountability issues in this country from all facets of life, whether cyber or not. I have to say that, yes, I was arrested by the FBI, and, of course, I was given the option to kind of, become a martyr or, just deal with the consequences as is and get cursed out by a bunch of people in the meantime and do some time, and there was a lot of consequences as a result of that. I had to deal with, trying to rebuild myself and get into career and build up my career again, but those are consequences of my actions, so I accept that. I think that what would benefit our society is, okay, there is a U.S. bad actor. You identify, you catch said bad actor. In terms of the sentencing guidelines, you know how the feds work. The sentencing guidelines are different than the state. You get You get caught for a first offense in the state, unless it's murder or some sexual assault thing. You know, they usually give you a reality check. They might put you through a program. If it's a drug-related crime, they put you through a program. You do 6 months upstate, shock therapy, right? You come out, and if you mess up again, that's when they blaze you, right?
Depends on what state you're in, but...
Depends on what state. But in New York, I would think New York would be tough, but apparently, you know, if you get hit with a drug crime here, you go through a shock program, you come out of 6 months. Basically, the judge is going to tell you, I'm going to give you the 6 months of shock. And if you mess up, I'm going to hit you triple, quadruple. And some people still get in trouble, but others like, oh, hell no, I'm not going to do no 10 years locked up upstate in Sing Sing or some crazy, prison. So I think that's a good idea. I would love, Chris, I'm gonna say it right now. And I'm saying it publicly so that if someone's listening that's in power, in the position of power, hear me out. If you identify a bad actor here in the United States and it's their first offense and they have an opportunity based off of your assessment that they could do good and they could change their lives, I'll gladly participate in any sort of rehab program to help these people back on their feet and get jobs and get into the cybersecurity industry. A lot of folks like myself, I grew up poor. I grew up in the streets. You know, I started hacking mainly out of curiosity, and I was naive. I was a naive young boy. And then, of course, once I get to hacktivism, that's when things changed drastically. But I knew at some point that what I was doing was wrong. When I got arrested by Chris, I had to sit down and analyze my position and just accept my fate and just deal with it. I think a lot of folks will do the same. And if there's some sort of rehab program, you're going to change a lot of lives. And I know exactly why these folks are talking the way they are about cybersecurity and having to put some heat behind consequences. And that is because you have groups like Scattered, Spider, Web, Calm, whatever you want to call them. They're a bunch
Orange
of young
chicken, pandas, express,
whatever, right? So you have these young folks here in the United States or Canada or the UK. They're getting involved in the wrong groups. They're learning the wrong things, and then they're leveraging it, sometimes for money. We saw some stories, Chris, recently about some Americans that were arrested. They were part of like a crypto extraction scam scheme, social engineering campaign with some SIM swapping and everything in between. And they got caught immediately by the FBI because their operational security was terrible. And they were taken down, and they're probably going to do a lot of time in prison. They have no guidance, Chris. There's no mentorship. If you go to YouTube and type in cybersecurity, you're going to find billions of videos. I agree. But I want you to take a look at those emails we get sometimes, Chris. You have folks that are in the technology space, and they're still confuzzled or confused, or they still need guidance on how to get into the cybersecurity space. It doesn't mean that they're not technical. It doesn't mean that they don't understand or can't do the job. It just means that there's no real guidance into the space that's proper. So I am for second chances, and I am for rehab. Now, once that person, after they go through a rehab program or something, and I'll gladly give up my time. I'll gladly donate time to the federal government to help some of these people out. If they screw up again, then you blaze them, 1,000%. But if they're young and dumb, and you already know, and I just saw your face right, I don't know what that's about.
Because confuzzle is a real word.
Of course it's a real word.
I had to look that shit up. I did not believe that confuzzled was a real word.
Come on, your boy. Listen, man. I've been around.
Last story, Hector. Americans shrug off data breaches despite rising threats. It turns out 65% of Americans are notified about data breaches in the past year, yet half admitted that they were desensitized to the issue. And then it went through and it kind of went what people were most concerned about. Social Security numbers, 97%, and banking details, 94% were top of the list of what was being leaked. I got to be honest. Those are not at the top of my list of what I'd be concerned about. Further down the list, only 60% was worried about medical history. So I've said it. We go and do the speeches and we talk about these things, Hector, but medical history is something that you can't change.
No.
Someone steals your Social Security number. You can get a new Social Security number. Somebody steals your banking details. You get a new bank account, new credit card. You can get all these things. You know what you can't get new of? Medical history. That is your medical history that you're never going to change. I mean, maybe people just don't think it's a big deal to talk about, you know, what you have and all that, but it's part of your identity that you can't get a new one of. And people don't seem to be scared. And then further down the list at 43%, internet browsing history. No chance do I want my internet browsing history to be made public.
I'm such a random person and I'm looking up random things that come to my head. Yeah. And I swear, if anyone looks at my browsing history, they'll be like, okay, this guy is crazy.
You might go to jail just about an internet browsing history.
Exactly right. Because I'm looking, so, you know, I'll be curious. I'm like, how is a nuclear warhead made?
It is funny how many times it comes up in court. Yeah. Internet browsing history when somebody gets arrested, what they look at, and like, you know, like it, so most of the time I'll see it back in the day was if we thought they were going to flee. Okay. So your initial appearance, you know, you talk to them, and whether the judge sets a bond or not, you could have put something in your browser history like how to get a fake passport like 10 years ago, and it'll keep your ass in jail. So that's where I see it come up in most, but man, yeah. Some of the searches I've done on the internet, man. First, I don't believe in incognito. I don't think it really does work. You know damn well that it still goes through your ISP. Maybe it doesn't keep a cookie on your machine, but your ISP still knows what you're looking up.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
You're gonna penetrate that pretty quick.
Well, let's look at what concerns people. That I'm assuming those are Americans, or is that a mix of people around the world?
No, it's Americans. Yeah.
Look at their concerns. Right? My Social Security. It's going to affect my credit. If it affects my credit, I can't buy a new house, a new car. I can't buy the things that I want. Maybe my credit limit is going to go down.
I don't know. I feel like Social Security number is one of the easiest ones to get on the dark web. I think people might just be uneducated.
I think an education is one, but another part is the consumerism aspect. Because if your Social Security is stolen and it is used, your credit score goes down and thus you could do less. Look at the next one. Banking details. I have money in the bank. I don't want that banking detail stolen. That's going to freak me out. It's going to ruin my day.
Yeah, but I guess I don't know what they mean by banking details, but you write a check to anybody. You write a check to pay your bill. Guess what's on that check? Your name, your address, sometimes your phone number, the routing number, the account number. Like what other banking details? The balance is the only thing that's not on there.
And plus, even if you steal someone's banking login, you can't just randomly go in there and siphon money. Not all banks do wire transfers through the website.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of them. You go, maybe Chase does it. Maybe a big credit union.
Your bank doesn't have some sort of secondary authentication for transferring money, there's something wrong.
That's exactly right. So
get a new bank. Yeah, number one concern, people, internet browsing history, because we know what perverts you are. We know how long you stayed on that video that you shouldn't have stayed on.
I know what you did last summer, for sure. And it wasn't pretty. I know, I can tell you that.
So, all right, Hector, I'm going to go and do my thing. I got a hockey game we're going to watch here in a few minutes. So, what are you going to do this evening? Capitals at Dallas. I'm a big Washington Capitals fan.
Really?
Yeah.
I gotta send me a link. I'll try to find the game online. I got like FUBO or something. I'll try to check on that if they have the game.
Yeah.
See what's up with that, bro. But listen, brother, let me tell you something. It's always a pleasure sitting down with you and chopping it up and nerding it out and talking some shit. And yeah, I know some of our audiences are like when we curse, and you know, take my apologies as is. I'll make it up to you one day.
Oh, I forgot about the cursing thing. Yeah, Hector recently told me that a guy came up to him after a speech and said that I shouldn't curse. And now I will tell him the two times that I cursed, they were quotes. It was not me cursing. Now, tonight on tonight's show, I straight up cursed.
So can I share that story with the audience? Because I think it was interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lay out the story for you guys and give us your opinion. Shoot us an email at questions@hackerinthefed.com. I want your perspective on this. So Chris and I did a speech in Orlando. That was it, right?
Yeah.
We did a presentation in Orlando. Shout out to GuidePoint. You know, they did a really good show. And so, boom, we're on stage, and Chris is telling his story. He's quoting someone cursing. And me, someone asked the question, because Chris said that one of the companies I hacked into was like a toilet paper company or something. And so I made a joke off the cuff, and I just replied back with shit happens. Okay. So after Chris leaves, the person didn't confront Chris. He waited for Chris to leave. The guy comes up to me very serious. I'm not admonishing him, by the way. It's just an interesting story to tell. He comes up to me. He's like, I'm going to tell you something right now, and I very much mean it. I'm being very serious with you. You know, Chris doesn't have to curse. You know what? He curses. It makes him look very unprofessional. And but it's okay. I know you curse, but it, you know, it's whatever. But Chris, no. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait,
you're
am
a
I
filthy
chopped
hacker.
Liver? Yeah. You're a bad guy, so he could curse, but Chris, no, Chris cannot curse.
Yeah, I found it interesting. Again, mine were just quotes, you know, but I say love you. You know, I am conscious of it. I do look in the audience and I will dumb that down if there's like a lot of, you know, ladies and a lot of children in the audience. If there's any children, I'll definitely calm it down. But I don't know why the hell a child is watching you and I talk about cybersecurity.
Well, I think it goes back to people growing up watching films and TV shows about the FBI. And the way they portrayed you guys growing up are of like robotic professionals in suits. And you guys are either very scary or very good at what you do, right? And so people had that stuck in their head. I can only imagine that when he saw you say the F word. It must have been like a culture shock for me. Whoa, this is an FBI agent saying the F word. What the hell is this?
I don't know. I'd be interested. Yeah, reach out to us. Yeah, you know, questions of Hacker and the Fed if you get an opinion on this and whether we should curse in our speeches or not. 5-star reviews. Share us on social media. Tell your coworkers and friends about us. Spread the word of the show because Hector and I love doing it. We want to reach out to as many people as we can about cybersecurity and, you know, our take on it. And hopefully people can take one or two things from us and sort of heighten their security, be a little bit more secure than the guy they're sitting next to. Hector, love and respect you, brother.
Love you too, my man. And hope everyone has a great holidays and great new year. Cheers.
Cheers.